Today's episode of Open Floor is brought to you by FreshBooks. It's smart, mobile accounting designed specifically for freelancers and small business owners. You can try FreshBooks for 30 days on us with no credit card required. Go to freshbooks.com/sports and enter sports in the How You Heard About Us section. Kyrie is kind of suspect. Kevin Love is arguably even more suspect. I understand LeBron's frustration, but then I also look at LeBron. I think he's watching Steph Curry every night and getting like progressively more stressed out and stressing everyone else out in Cleveland when like the Cavs should be perfectly content with where they are. They will have a shot in the finals and like all of this is going okay. They couldn't have predicted that the Warriors would go nuts on the entire league. I kind of feel like LeBron is A, not a fun teammate to play for, and B, like actively making things more complicated by just constantly stressing everyone out. All right, so we're back. Ben, how's it going, man?
I'm good. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm running on like 3 hours of sleep, so you might have to just cut me off if I get too delirious on any of this conversation.
I feel you. I just needed a five-hour energy myself, so we'll just power through here. See what we can do. How's Southern California?
It's good. I mean, we get Clippers Thunder tonight here in LA, which is always exciting. So it's nice when KD and Russell Westbrook and the rest of the show come to town. So that's always a day to circle on the calendar.
I mean, like, where were you for Saturday night with the Warriors?
Oh, I was sitting at my desk losing my freaking mind. 3x3, I was digging through archives of three-point records trying to assemble everything that Steph was doing in real time. I was panicking. I was on the floor in a cocoon when he sprained his ankle. it was a lot going on that night.
Dude, that was just wild. I feel like, first of all, I feel like that game was a victory for a bunch of people who aren't cool anymore, because I went out to dinner and came home and just like hung out on a Saturday night. And that game was much cooler than anything anything else I could have been doing.
No, I was going to say the whole Saturday night thing has really kind of caught me by surprise, because when they first rolled it out, I was like, oh, this is kind of risky. Like, they're putting a lot of really good matchups on Saturday night. I'm not sure anyone's really going to care. And then it just turned out that Steph and the Warriors were so awesome and so popular and so completely crossing over to casual fans that it was really the most ingenious, like, foresight type of move that Lee could make, because who wasn't watching that game on Saturday night?
You know,
cool
so
or not, everybody was watching it.
Here's the thing. I think Saturday night basketball is still kind of iffy, because, like, a lot of times I'm just, like, not trying to block off 3 hours to watch, like, LeBron versus the Bulls. But you can absolutely put the Warriors on every Saturday night and it'll work, because like I'll always watch that team. And Warriors Thunder should just be a Saturday night tradition in the NBA every week.
I also want to know, like, what are the odds that Draymond has his halftime tirade if they're playing that Sunday afternoon game versus the Saturday night game? Like, I feel maybe it's not the same kind of juice and the same kind of vibe. So, I mean, maybe that kind of helped set the mood a little bit. Like, they feel like they're on a bigger stage when they're not playing at, like, you know, the weird Sunday afternoon slot. You know, I've never been a big fan of that Sunday game. So to me, I mean, it's not like I have plans or a social life or whatever. So the Saturday night part of it doesn't really matter. I actually kind of like it. Like, I'm a quick convert. Like, and when it first came out, I was like, no, I'm not about this at all. It's just weird, different. Now I'm all in.
Yeah, I just kind of like having like my own time away from the NBA where I'm not like glued to a television. But like Saturday night, I was screaming in my living room. It was wild. And speaking of Draymond, shout out to Lisa Salters for reporting on that tirade, because that's sort of like a reporting gray area. But that added like a whole second layer to what was going on in that second half.
So there was only one confusing part to me about it, though, which is why was there the initial hedge on whether it was Draymond or not? Like, his voice is pretty obvious, number one. Number two, who else in that locker room is going to be freaking out like that, saying I'm not a robot? Like, maybe most space. Like, you can't really talk me into any of the other guys on the team doing that.
I love that. I love that part of her report, because it was like there was screaming and shouting and foul language. And we believe it might have been Draymond Green. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, it's definitely Draymond Green.
Can we go to his mom on Twitter for confirmation?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, how much do you read into that? Do you think it's just sort of the product of people getting kind of worn out like over the course of a road trip? Or do you think there's more there?
Well, to me, first of all, it's a gigantic story. Like, if they had lost that game, that's the lead story for a week. It's like, you know, are there internal conflicts? Does everything that seems so rosy on the surface not really so rosy? Why are they talking about shots? Why is this guy who's, you know, this triple-double machine even worried about his shooting? Where's his shooting touch gone? I mean, that would really have put him under the microscope in a big way. So, number one, Steph's three-pointer not only gave us, like, the moment of the season, you know, that last shot, and about 5 million memes, but it totally saved Draymond. So Draymond owes him for that one.
Yeah, Ethan Strauss hit on that. It was like that really could have turned into a week of like the Warriors on First Take, people freaking out about the locker room dynamics. And then Steph was so good that like nobody even remembered the Draymond tirade thing.
Oh, for sure. And I think it's going to come back. I mean, that seed is now planted, though. You know, so the first time they lose a playoff game, if they get down in series, you know, if Draymond comes out and he struggles like he did at the start of the finals, I mean, let's not forget the first couple of games of the finals. Like, he was not his normal self. He's thrown alley passes into, like, the 15th row, and everyone's wondering, like, what's he doing? So, you know, if that stuff pops up again, I think people are going to look back at this incident. So I don't think that they're, like, totally clear of it for good. But I thought they handled the aftermath of it perfectly, which is what you expect. I mean, they're such a well-oiled machine. You know, Kerr kind of, you know, cracking jokes about people not being in the locker room, and Draymond, you know, stepping forward and apologizing, which is what he should do, by the way. I mean, given his stature on that team, he should apologize, and he should kind of publicly take ownership of what he said. He shouldn't try to duck it and dodge it. So to me, they handled the aftermath really well. They prevented it from being sort of a multi-day story. And they kind of cruise forward. But I wouldn't be surprised if that's the last we hear of this kind of tension.
Yeah, I'd also say that Draymond Green, a lot of people, he's been sort of struggling since the All-Star break, although last night against the Hawks, we're recording this on a Wednesday afternoon, last night against the Hawks, he played pretty well. But basically, there's a lot of speculation that like the All-Star break sort of threw him out of rhythm. And I would add that at the All-Star break, he was wearing a Frank Lucas, like, American gangster mink coat that got him a lot of attention. But people have to remember from that movie, things did not go well for Frank Lucas after he wore that coat, and which is also based on a true story. So I'm just saying, maybe Draymond was sort of tempting fate with that a little bit.
There's also the whole SI coverage angle too. You know, I mean, it easily could have been a preemptive SI coverage. So you throw together the coat and the SI coverage this week. I mean, that's a lot of negative karma.
Do you know how proud I am to be part of the jinxing institution now? Because Steph is hurt now. I mean, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen to the Warriors? They could really fall off here. thank you, Rick Riley. But yeah, so let's get back. We got tomorrow night, we got Warriors Thunder. Did anything from that game make you think that the Thunder can really push the Warriors in the playoffs? I mean, mostly I walked away from that game being like, I need Thunder Warriors conference finals, but do you think they can actually win?
Well, can I just ask you a quick question in sort of on behalf of the good people of San Antonio, Texas, which is, why are you not mentioning the Spurs? I mean, how is that?
I don't know, man. I feel like the Spurs have gotten kind of lost in the Warrior, in like the Warriors conversation a little bit. There were a couple weeks earlier this year where everyone was like, you know what, the Spurs are the real best team in the NBA. And then the Warriors just like blew them off the court. So I think until they play again, I think people have kind of forgotten about the Spurs. And so, yeah, maybe I'm not giving the Spurs enough credit. And I also think, I mean, the Spurs beat the Thunder on opening night, at least. And I mean, I could see that. I could see them getting there too.
Let me blow your mind real quick. So San Antonio, since January 1, has a better record and a better point differential than Golden State. They still haven't lost at home.
The Spurs are so ridiculous, man.
And they're going to have home court against Oklahoma City in the second round if it matches up 2-3.
Yeah.
Before we get too excited about this Golden State-Oklahoma City series, I mean, I think we really have to say San Antonio, like, there's a lot going for them. And I think the number one thing they've got in that, potentially in that second round matchup, that could really spoil everything, is they've got Kawhi Leonard to just stick on Kevin Durant and chase him around the court for as many minutes as it takes. And if I'm Kevin Durant, that's not a matchup I'm really looking forward to. You know, I mean, maybe as a competitor, he feels like, you know, he should be able to win that, and he probably should. But, you know, when you're basically a five-man team or a four-and-a-half-man team in Oklahoma City, and you're going against, you know, an 8-9, 10-man San Antonio team, you know, Kevin's got to win that matchup by a wide, wide margin. And I'm not sure that the distance between those two players is as big as it would need to be from Oklahoma City's sake. And I think the only way the Thunder really win that series is if Westbrook just takes it to another level. He's given the Spurs trouble in the past. I mean, he's clearly their big matchup advantage. But he would have to, I think, you know, get to the point where he's basically averaging triple doubles in that series, you know, playing 45 minutes a game for them to be able to beat the Spurs. I think the Spurs are that good.
Well, let me add that the Spurs, I've never really been a fan of the Spurs until they added my friend Kirk Goldsberry, who is now working in their front office. So I think in addition to Kawhi, the Spurs real the number one factor working in the Spurs' favor is Kirk Goldsberry. But I will also say that, yeah, I think Kawhi historically has given them so much trouble, and given he's probably the best player in the league to guard Durant, and that's really where his value is added when you put him up against Durant and LeBron. My thing with the Spurs, though, is I don't know if they can stay healthy. Manu is out right now. Tony Parker has always been sort of like, basically their fate in the postseason rises or falls with Tony Parker's like ankle cartilage. So we'll see if they can stay healthy. And if they are, they're definitely favored in any Thunder series.
Yeah, so I think the Parker thing is really interesting because he looked so bad against Golden State. He basically looked unplayable in that game against Golden State. And
I don't think he's going to look that bad again.
Well, yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's tough. I mean, Steph obviously can make people look really bad at a moment's notice, right?
Right.
But when I was watching that game, my thought the whole time was, why is Pop even playing him right now? He's got to get him out. He's got to go to Patty Mills. He's got to try a different lineup where if it's Kyle Anderson, whoever it is, he's got to find something else because this Tony Parker thing is just not going to cut it. So to me, I actually wonder whether when push comes to shove, like if they do make it to the Western Conference Finals and he's trying to match up with Steph, or even in a series against Russell Westbrook, I wonder, like, in those big moments, is it still going to be Parker getting those minutes, or is Pop going to go a different direction? You know, regardless of his health, I mean, assuming that he's healthy, I just wonder if he's maybe at a different stage of his career. But
yeah, that's a good point.
It's hard to pin them down though, because, you know, one, Duncan missed a bunch of time. So, you know, were they just kind of, you know, putting him on ice, or where's his game going to be at? Can't he reach that same height as last year's playoffs? I think that's a big open question. And then number two, like, LaMarcus has this really weird dance where he's trying to fit into this team. You know, he's sacrificing his numbers for the greater good. He's kind of ceding authority to Kawhi Leonard. But during the playoffs, like, the only time he's ever won a series is when he went for 40-plus back-to-back games against Houston. Like, that was the successful model for him, right?
Yeah.
So how does he balance those kinds of responsibilities? Like, does he do too much? Does he do too little? And he's going to have tough matchups. I mean, Oklahoma City's got Ibaka throw at him. If they, you know, wind up facing Golden State, is Draymond, you know, that's a nightmare for LaMarcus, no question about it.
Well, so I also think, I think that they brought LaMarcus in, like, apology to any listeners. Everyone gets bored listening to people talk about the Spurs, but I think that they brought LaMarcus in as sort of like the half court answer to what the Warriors do. Like, they can slow the game down, work it to him, and he can sort of create offense in the half court and help sort of dictate the pace a little bit. And he didn't do that at all the first game in Golden State. But like, with both LaMarcus and Tony Parker, I just think that that game kind of got out of hand. And when you get, when those games get out of hand at Oracle, like shit just goes like really wrong, because then the Warriors start making threes and it just gets like, it's impossible for even good teams to deal with. But I think that in a 7-game series, it's going to be harder, and the Spurs will be more comfortable than they were that night.
Well, for sure. I mean, I'm definitely, if they're getting smoked every night by the same margin, I think it was like 30 points in Golden State, I mean, that would be bad. But LaMarcus was so bad, he quit all his Twitter accounts and his Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah,
so whatever,
that's right.
Whenever that happens, you know, it's been a tough night.
That was a full-on crisis.
Oh, yeah. And they were dejected. I mean, at least he was in the locker room afterwards, and he looked pretty frustrated with Draymond. I guess my big question is, so if like your plan is to pound him one-on-one against Draymond in a half-court setting, or even Bogut, like, is that a winning formula? You know, or what are your other options? And it goes back to me also to Kawhi in terms of really taking the next step. You know, I thought he was one of the major reasons they lost against the Clippers. You know, I didn't think he did enough offensively. I didn't think he was sort of naturally assertive late in that series. He just frankly needed to score more and do more. And so I think that's going to be a key for them too, because that's one of their matchup advantages against Golden State. It's like, you know, he could potentially be the best wing on the court at any point. But he's got to score in volume. He's got to get to the free throw line. He's got to act like a 20 points per game scorer. He can't have that off night during the series, or, you know, it's going to kind of be a wrap.
Okay, so moving from the Warriors and Spurs, or sticking with the Warriors kind of, let's talk Cavs. And let me start with Anderson Varejao, his quote getting to when he got to the Warriors. He said, "I'm glad I came here because I can tell they actually love each other. That's what it's about. When you want to win, you have to be like they are. Friends that have fun out there, have fun in the locker room." All right. Next quote, LeBron: "I would hope if you're 50-5 that everyone loves each other. I mean, shit, what else do you want to do at that point? Duh." And then finally, a quote from a Basketball Insiders article by Alex Kennedy: "Sources close to the situation have described the Cavaliers' locker room as miserable at times, even when the team is having success. Part of the problem, according to sources, is that James is an extremely demanding leader and has a strong sense of urgency since he's 31 years old. The intensity can be a good thing, as he's led his teammates to work harder and play to their potential. However, it has also led to some issues, especially since James is at a different stage of his career than many of Cleveland's other key contributors." So where are you at with the Cavs? What do you make of all this? There have been Kyrie trade rumors started by Stephen Smith, but he's been fairly reliable in the past, actually. And so where are you at?
Well, I feel like I'm going to sound like a Pollyanna on this one. So I kind of want to hear, like, are you in on these rumors? Because I guess I default to, they're still, you know, the best team in the Eastern Conference. They still have a cushion. They just played the number two team in the Eastern Conference in Toronto, and it took, you know, a hero ball long two from Kyle Lowry, not to mention a career-high 43 points from Kyle Lowry, to win in that game. I thought that they were pretty physical with Toronto, and I could see if they did match up like in the Eastern Conference Finals that approach would really wear on Toronto, and that Cleveland seemed like they had a little bit, it wasn't like they were rattling the Raptors, but they looked more comfortable in sort of that playoff-type intensity maybe than Toronto did. I think that they're winning lots of key matchups, you know, one versus two. And then I think there's a big drop off with the rest of the conference. So, like, I'm still just continuing to say, like, these guys could hate each other. LeBron could be the worst locker room leader in the world. Kyrie could be a head case. Kevin Love could not fit in. He doesn't get to be in the Instagram photos with his teammates. I mean, you can run down all these little petty things, and I could grant you all of them. Is it that big of a deal?
So I have a couple responses. First of all, I love that Instagram drama has been like a legitimate storyline over the past 18 months in Cleveland. And second of all, I'm glad you mentioned the Kyle Lowry shot on Friday night, because that was ridiculous. I came away from that shot being like, you know what? I love hero ball, and I will rep for hero ball for the rest of my life, because it's just a cooler way to play basketball. And then Steph confirmed it on Saturday night. Anyways, as for the Cavs, I wrote about them earlier this week and said basically what you said, like, this Toronto thing is just sort of We did this with the Hawks last year. There's not a clear challenger in the East, and you're not going to convince me otherwise, no matter how close they play in the regular season. Just because when things get tight in the playoffs, like, LeBron is the best weapon in basketball, except for possibly Steph. But at the same time, I was in the locker room on Sunday when they got blown out by the Wizards, who are not in a great place right now. And it was just like, it was a grim locker room. Like, the Cleveland reporters were kind of like sort of sick of dealing with the drama with this team. And like the players all seemed down, and it's just, it doesn't seem like the dynamics are very healthy in Cleveland. So basically, like, I'm walking away being like, you know what? I'm not worried at all about the Cavs in the Eastern Conference playoffs, but like, I want to know what happens from here, because Kyrie has not, as much as people focus on Love, Kyrie has been just as tough to deal with LeBron, and isn't healthy half the time. And it's like, I can't really blame LeBron for being frustrated.
Well, I don't know if you saw Steve Kerr's quote this week, where he was kind of comparing and contrasting Steph with Michael Jordan. He was saying how Michael was kind of on his own level in terms of fame, had his own security, and was, just kind of on a different level of rock star from the rest of the Bulls in the 96, and how Steph is a little bit different, where he's just sort of one of the guys, and he's just as famous almost as Jordan was, you know, at the respective peaks of their popularity in terms of the kind of frenzies that they create. But that Steph just kind of handles it in a different way, where, you know, he's spending more time with his teammates and he's checking into a hotel just, you know, with the rest of them and little things like that. I kind of wonder if there's a little bit of that with LeBron too. I mean, just from spending limited time around him during the playoffs the last few years, you know, he's kind of always in his own bubble. And like, even when he's bringing his teammates up on the podium for post-game press conferences, it just always feels so forced. It's sort of like, hey, I'm letting you kind of like agree.
He did that with Dellavedova in the finals last year, and it was like, oh, this is a grand gesture.
Yeah, it's like, it's supposed to be like Dellavedova is like the highlight of his life, right? Like, LeBron invited him up on stage, or like, you know, it's almost like he gives Tristan Thompson that hat that he was wearing during the post. You know, it's sort of like, here's like the LeBron sanctioned hat that you can wear on this press conference with me. I mean, obviously I'm making that up, but you kind of get where I'm...
No. I feel you. And so this, I go back and forth between basically like, Kyrie is kind of suspect. Kevin Love is arguably even more suspect. And I understand LeBron's frustration, but then I also look at LeBron. I think he's watching Steph Curry every night and getting like progressively more stressed out and stressing everyone else out in Cleveland, when like, the Cavs should be perfectly content with where they are. They will have a shot in the finals, and like, all of this is going okay. They couldn't have predicted that the Warriors would like go nuts on the entire league, but they're still in good shape. And I kind of feel like LeBron is A, not a fun teammate to play for, and B, like, actively making things more complicated by just constantly stressing everyone out. Like, the other thing I didn't read here, I've got this. Let me pull up this tweet. His tweet. It's okay to know you've made a mistake. We all do at times. Just be ready to live with whatever that comes with it, and be with those who will protect you at all cost. Like, I don't know what the hell that means. I don't know who made the mistake or what he's talking about, but that does not create like a more comfortable locker room.
It really sounds like the kind of thing you would write to your wife when you're trying to get a divorce.
Yeah, like, and maybe that's to Kyrie, you know, who knows?
Yeah. So, well, here's the thing. I do think that LeBron has to win on his own terms. I think that's a big part of it. Like, and I think that's sort of really kind of crystallized even more once he got back to Cleveland. And I think another big part of it is life came at him really fast. You know, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that I was at All-Star Weekend, and he was fielding 45 minutes straight of questions a few years ago, whether he was going to be better than Michael Jordan. When's the last time people said that? When was the last time we had that conversation? You know, I mean, Steph has totally eclipsed him in terms of the hype. You know, it's Steph versus MJ constantly, Warriors versus Bulls constantly. You know, ultimately, when we do our SI Top 100 next fall, there's a really good chance LeBron's not number one for the first time in 5 years.
I would say that's pretty much a certainty at this point.
Exactly. So however long we've done it, but that would be, you know, that's a kind of a big moment, you know, passing of the torch. And when you're talking about LeBron and sort of his own narrative, like go to Kobe, right? I mean, Kobe's created this whole like after the fact narrative to kind of explain away some of his personality quirks earlier in his career. He's come up with this like hero villain campaign. Where, you know, he was just tough on his teammates because he was.
Kobe's entire career has been dedicated to crafting a narrative. It's pretty impressive.
Well, and so is LeBron. I mean, let's give him credit for doing the same thing. Coming home, you know, being the savior of Northeast Ohio, finding ways to make it bigger than basketball. I mean, he's been an expert at it too. But I guarantee you, he did not think his narrative was going to include two titles and that's it. You know?
Yeah.
And if his narrative ends with he never brings the Cavaliers a championship, that totally rewrites his place in basketball history. He knows a lot about basketball history. We know he studied that, you know, his entire adult life and probably even going back to when he was a teenager. So, I mean, that's a lot to process. Like, I think LeBron should be a little bit frustrated by that, or at least a little bit disoriented. And I don't really blame him for it. I do think, you know, the contrast between winning on his terms versus the Warriors winning on their team's terms, which kind of came through in that Varejao quote you read, I think there's something to that. I mean, he really has to have the ball in his hands. You know, in all the big moments, he's looking to make a lot of highlight assists. It seems to me like he's kind of chasing some highlight assists every once in a while recently. He's way too loose with his shot selection.
I also sort of think that that's why he went back to Cleveland and that he, because he's afforded freedom to do basically whatever he wants with the Cavs. And I think that that's not the healthiest thing. I think he could use a real coach. Like, he needed Eric Spoelstra to say, you're best playing in the post and just making defenses helpless. I think when he's out on the perimeter taking jump shots, like, there are games where you watch him and he's on and it's like, holy shit, this is the best player we've seen since Jordan. And then there are a lot of games where he does kind of like the offense bogs down and it's tougher for them to work. And I would agree with what you said about him with his narrative. I mean, like I wrote last year, it's kind of like sometimes with LeBron, you feel like he's doing things as if he were living his own biopic and sort of like living in a movie. And that's fine. But I just kind of get the sense that he's too self-aware sometimes. And Cleveland, like, all they need to do is just play out the year and then go into the finals and like see what happens. They'll have a shot, and then if it makes sense for them to trade Love and put LeBron in the post, and like that, it can still work going forward. Like, this is not the end of the Cavs era, so a lot of the panic kind of feels overblown to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I started, and just to kind of finish it and tie this off, I mean, I think part of it too is that, you know, some of these guys on his team are younger and less experienced than some of the key Warriors guys. I mean, I don't know if you have to have, you know, this drill sergeant mentality if you're LeBron. You know, certainly you could go too far with that. But he's trying to establish a defensive culture. You know, this is the second year of it. But I mean, look where the Cavs were defensively before he got there. I mean, he's an absolute disaster. I mean, look at some of these pieces that he's working with defensively in terms of Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving. I think we talked about that last week with, you know, some of their deficiencies there. I mean, a lot of that stuff demands just discipline and understanding and cohesiveness and all those kinds of things that look like a not a lot of fun from the outside. And some of those things just naturally have already gelled in Golden State when you've got the kind of talent that they have defensively and the kind of selfless personalities that they have in that locker room. So I don't think necessarily that even if there's this big contrast that we're seeing, I don't know if that makes LeBron the bad guy. I don't know if that makes it his fault that everybody's unhappy.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I also, you can't blame anyone for watching the Warriors and being like, what do we do? This sucks. They've stolen the NBA. All right, hold on. We're going to take a quick break to talk about FreshBooks. Every great team has a strong support system to back them up. The same goes for your business, and FreshBooks is here to help. For the best way to manage your books and make tax season easy, get FreshBooks. It's a super intuitive tool that makes creating and sending invoices extremely simple for freelancers and small business owners. FreshBooks stands out where it really counts, getting you paid. You can create and send professional invoices in just 30 seconds. You'll see exactly when your client looked at the invoice you've emailed, tracking the status of all your outstanding invoices. FreshBooks can even send late payment reminders to your clients automatically, which means you're not wasting time chasing down and fighting clients for payment. The results speak for themselves. FreshBooks users get paid 5 days faster on average. Don't just take my word for it. Right now, FreshBooks is offering our listeners 30 days of unrestricted use. Totally free, and you don't need a credit card to sign up. Just go to freshbooks.com/sports and enter sports in the How You Heard About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/sports, and you enter sports in the How You Heard About Us section. If you're enjoying this podcast, this week on the Gray Area podcast, Maggie Gray sits down with the MMQB's Peter King for a fascinating conversation about his future at Sports Illustrated, the allegations against Peyton Manning resurfacing, Johnny Manziel's future, and much more. Search and subscribe to The Gray Area on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud, and you can find more great Sports Illustrated podcasts at si.com/podcasts. All right, and we're back. So I have another question, kind of related to the LeBron stuff. On Friday, this past Friday, we at SI had to come up with our greatest starting lineup ever, taking players from all over NBA history. Who did you choose?
Well, I had the most, I think basic is the slang term. I had the most basic team. You know, I had Magic, Mike, I had LeBron, I had Tim Duncan, and I had Bill Russell. So I just went maxed out on championships and rings, which is me, and I maxed out on MVP awards, basically. I think the trickiest one for me was, LeBron or Bird, but ultimately I came down with LeBron just because the coolest stat to me is that he went 26-6 for 10 straight years, and he was the only person during that time period to do that.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's just crazy, ridiculous statistical dominance. And I think, you know, he did it with such amazing scrutiny from the start and with basically no injuries for a decade in a row and gigantic minutes and so many finals appearances and multiple titles, that, you know, if push comes to shove, I kind of like LeBron in that matchup versus Bird. And the rest of the guys, I was really looking at this through the legacy prism as opposed to like putting together a cohesive team.
Okay, so I kind of use this exercise as a vehicle for all my secret hot takes. Number one, I'm not down with Jordan. Jordan was the greatest player ever. I'm not debating that. But I would rather, if I'm building the perfect starting lineup, I don't think Jordan and Steph would work well together, and I'd rather have Steph than Magic. So I'm sorry. I haven't even gotten to the Tim Duncan part yet. And I know you love Duncan, but I just don't think Duncan would make sense in this lineup either, because then you slow down the pace so that he can get going. And I think Tim Duncan is one of the greatest players of all time, but I also think it's tough to put him on a different team and imagine him being as successful as he's been. I also think that you factor in basically when people talk about his legacy, they talk about all the winning seasons and all the titles, and nobody's talking about his actual game. Actual game, give me Kevin Garnett. My only regret, I picked Steph Curry, Ray Allen, Scottie Pippen, Kevin Garnett, and Hakeem Olajuwon, who Hakeem was ridiculous. I was looking on his basketball reference page, and he was through the end of the 80s and the early 90s, even before the titles, he was just ridiculous every year, with 11 or 12 rebounds and blocks. He was one of the best shot blockers ever. So he's basically like Bill Russell and Kareem combined. But, But my big regret was not including LeBron for because just as a two-way player, he's as good as the NBA's ever had.
Okay, so you include, let me get this straight. You included Hakeem Olajuwon, whose only championships came basically as charity for Michael Jordan because he went to go play baseball, but you didn't include Michael Jordan himself. Did I get that right?
I will grant you, look, my relationship with Michael Jordan is a little bit colored by his Wizards tenure, and it just like, he's great. I won't debate that. But I kind of wanted to build a team without Jordan that was good enough to beat Jordan.
Okay. Well, that's a fun exercise. And that's kind of a different question. Okay. So to me, let's just get this clear up front, like, so I can just put my cards on the table. Like, I'm basically the biggest Jordan stan that there is.
Wow.
So one of my formative experiences in life was seeing the 72 win Bulls in Portland. And we had really good seats, and it was, my dad had to get like five other tickets to like preseason games against whoever the worst teams in the league were as part of the package to like get the Bulls ticket. Like, it was that hard to get back then. And we were sitting pretty close, and you know, the game's unfolding, and you just always, the whole time, it's the same thing that everyone talks about with Steph this week, the inevitability factor. Like, he's going to do it. He's going to do it. He's going to do it. He's Jordan. And you're just thinking like, yeah, I don't even know how old I was. Maybe I was 12. And the whole building is thinking the same thing. And sure enough, final possession, Arvydas Sabonis in the paint. He's going up for a hook shot. Jordan swipes him clean, takes it the other way. Uncontested dunk. Blazers have to take timeout. Game over. He did it again. And you know, that kind of thing just sticks with you, you know, decades later. And you go back and watch the tape. And it's the exact same feeling. I mean, you can see the crowd react like he's so unstoppable. And so to me, I'm making my best team ever. That's my franchise guy. No questions asked.
That's fair. My formative experience with MJ was like, he's going to do it. He's going to do it. He's Jordan. Oh, wait, this guy is 38 years old and he can't really move anymore. And he's kind of a dick and he's screwing up the entire franchise. And oh, wait, he just left town and doesn't care. So I don't like have every, the same kind of nostalgia.
You're every Lakers fan teenager right now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Except Jordan never won us any titles. But I understand. I did watch him come to the Capitol Center in Landover, Maryland, and just like destroy the Bullets as a kid. And I mean, he was unbelievable. And the thing that he and Steph have in common is that basically, like, there's so much hype, and then they managed to just exceed the hype every night, and that's something that we've never seen. Like, you could say that like LeBron matched the hype coming into the NBA, but there's hasn't been anybody since Jordan who can do what Steph's doing, which is just like take all these expectations and then push it to another level where you're like, wow, I'm just lucky to be watching this.
Well, yeah, my favorite thing, basically, whenever I'm watching a game and somebody has like an absurd night, and then you race the Basketball Reference to see like who's posted that same stat line ever before, and the answer is invariably always Jordan. Like, that, yeah, to me is a sign of greatness. Like, there's almost no, you know, outside of these like 12 three-pointer things that Steph's doing, which is really changing the nature of the game. I mean, he's always there. He just looms over all these guys, whether it's Westbrook's triple doubles, whether it's Kevin Durant's crazy scoring numbers, whether it's Steph's, you know, multiple 50-point games, whether it's Kobe's, you know, scoring average, you know, peak scoring averages during his career, whether it's LeBron, sort of like all-around box scores at the peak of his Miami tenure. Like, Jordan was always there for every single one of those guys. And so I just have such a hard time, like, personality aside, like, story aside, like, I just feel like he has to be on there, and it's like a slap in his face. Personally, you're slapping him in the face if you don't have
money. I mean, first of all, yes, Jordan was this Steph Curry season, but for like 15 years straight, which is like insane. And you're right. You have the correct take on the all-time starting lineup.
Hold on one second, though. Imagine if Curry, after completing a three-peat, what if he just, like, turned pro in golf?
Oh, my God. That would, I would support that. Like, that would be awesome. I would love to see, I would be, can you imagine how many new golf fans would be created by that?
Well, can you imagine, yeah, and how many people would go to his tournament?
Yeah, I would be down there at the Masters with the with Woody Johnson or whoever the Augusta president is. I would be eating my pimento, just like rocking out for Steph.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It's so, like, you go back to Jordan, he was on these buses, famously on these like AA buses, and no one's paying attention to him, and he's using it as his way to escape. And you think about Steph, like, there's no escape for him. I mean, he's so famous at this point. Like, the only way he's going to get less famous is whenever his game declines, because it's not like he's going to get less fun as he's progressing through his prime. I mean, he's so young still. Now, he's looking at a really solid run here, 3, 4, 5 years of just absolutely obscene fame. And it's going to be interesting. How do you deal with that? I mean, how many precedents are there to look back on guys who successfully have dealt with it?
I think your golf idea is really good. I think that's the answer. I think he's going to need to just like win a couple more titles and then go play, hit the PGA, tour the world with like David Duval. I don't think David Duval is still a golfer, but who's a good golfer? There's Johnson. Yeah, I don't really know, but let's go. Let's put Steph on the PGA and see what happens. Moving on here, I want to talk about the piece you wrote today with players who will be like in the bullseye for the playoffs. Who you had five names, one of whom is Harrison Barnes, and his Cantor we talked about last week. But talk about the rest of your list.
Yeah, so I mean, the five guys, they're all kind of on here for different reasons, and like obviously these are not the highest pressure guys. Of course, LeBron, Steph, Draymond. I mean, those are the guys who are going to kind of get the bulk of the pressure and the attention with the main storyline. So I'm really looking for guys who are in different situations and what are their stories as they approach the playoffs. And so the guys I picked: Isaiah Thomas for Boston, DeMar DeRozan for Toronto, Harrison Barnes, who you mentioned, Blake Griffin for the Clippers. I think he's kind of the biggest star on the list. And then Cantor. And, in some cases, it's about contracts. Like, DeMar's playing for a contract, but to me, he's also playing a little bit for his reputation, right? Like, if he doesn't win a playoff series, if they get, like, a 2-7 matchup with, say, Indiana or Chicago, and
or
guys
the
like Paul
Wizards.
George or the Wizards, yeah. And so, Paul George or Jimmy Butler or Otto Porter or whoever locks him up, and now he's going into free agency and, like, somebody's going to have to pay him a max, but do you want that guy as your max guy? I think that's really going to become, potentially his reputation. And like a worst case scenario, he starts to look like, like an Atlanta Hawks Joe Johnson, signing that gigantic deal and then getting moved to Brooklyn. I mean, he starts to kind of get into that territory. Whereas right now, I think he's still kind of a feel-good story for the Raptors. He's been there forever. Fans love him. He had a tough go in the playoffs last year, but he's had a career year kind of bouncing back from it. So I think he's a guy who's kind of in the spotlight. Just real quick on Isaiah Thomas, I think last year it was like no pressure. I mean, he was like the new guy, came, helped them burst into the playoffs kind of as a surprise. Nobody really cared when they got swept. It wasn't like this heartbreaking thing because they were just kind of happy to be there. They were playing with house money. And to me, Boston's good enough this year where that should not at all be their approach. Like, they should win a playoff series. And if they don't, I think that's going to be a disappointment. And he's their closing guy. I mean, he's leading them in clutch scoring. The ball's always in his hands. He's basically their lead, and in some cases, a lot of times, only playmaker. That's a lot of pressure. And he didn't perform very well in the playoffs last year, so he's going to kind of have to show that.
I mean, it's pretty shocking that he hasn't broken down thus far. Like, it's already worked better than it should be working with Isaiah.
Yeah, he's so slippery. I think he's got a little Steph slipperiness. Like, Steph does a pretty good job of avoiding the big hits, and I think some people are scared to hit him. But I think some of it, too, is just body contortion. And, Isaiah is also, like, kind of a small target, and that helps, too, because, when he's kind of attacking the basket in traffic, he can contort himself around some of the hits, which definitely helps.
Well, I go out to Seattle every summer, and I've seen him play a bunch of sort of like rec league games in Seattle. And let me tell you something, Isaiah Thomas, very good on the Celtics, but he straight up murders people in the summer. Like, put him in a summer basketball situation and he's like the best player on earth. It's him and Steph Curry. So it's fun to watch him succeed in the NBA. But like I was talking to somebody yesterday, like, who knows how long this can last? I think like even when the Celtics made the trade, they were sort of like, there were people within the Celtics who were iffy about it, and it'll be interesting to see whether he sort of makes sense for the long term. But I really like what you're talking about with DeRozan too, because he has. I mean, granted, I've been wrong about the Raptors since October, but I don't necessarily trust DeRozan in the playoffs, so maybe I'll be wrong again. But it just, he seems like kind of hawksy, like what we saw with Atlanta last year, where it's like he's doing a lot in the regular season, and if you put him against playoff defenses who are keying against him every night, like it may not go as well.
Yeah, so just real quick on Isaiah, I totally agree about the future, and to a certain degree, he's kind of playing. This playoffs will sort of determine if he gets to keep the car keys, right? Like, yeah. If he can step forward and be the 25 or 20 point a game scorer, hit some shots late in games, get them a series victory. It becomes, you know, even if you're trying to chase these blockbuster moves like Boston is, like it becomes kind of hard to break that thing up because the positive momentum's been going so steadily for so long, and you've got him under contract cheap for two more seasons, right? So that's a lot in his favor. But if he kind of does the same thing last year where he gets swarmed by these longer and bigger defenders in the playoffs, he can't stay efficient, he can't get to the free throw line as much, all of a sudden now you're saying, look, everybody's on the table. Boston still doesn't have a superstar piece. They have to cash in all these assets to get, you know, a real number one guy. And whoever that might be, like that guy's touches and his, you know, need for shots and everything else is going to marginalize Isaiah. And we've seen in the past, like that hasn't always been a great situation. Like, there was a reason Sacramento moved on from Isaiah. There was a reason why Phoenix moved on from Isaiah. Like, he's definitely very comfortable having as many shots and as big of a green light as possible. So that's another reason why he's kind of in the bullseye, because his future and Boston's future really, more than you might think, kind of hinge on his performance in this postseason, I think.
Yeah, because he's also not, like, he doesn't really know how to play a different way. It's like, it's either going to work this way or it's just not going to work. Like, he's not going to just sort of blend into the backcourt and while the Celtics add a different piece and have the offense revolve around someone else.
Totally. And so I think with DeMar, I mean, my questions are, so much of his offense is coming basically unassisted, you know? And so then you're just kind of playing Russian roulette. Like, is he going to be on and able to hit 45% of his jumpers or 50% of his jumpers on any given game? Or is he going to go 1-for-11 because every shot's contested and he's not really getting clean looks and he's doing a lot of bailing out of the team, you know, late in shot clock? And then the other question is, like, he could not get to the free throw line last year during the playoffs. Like, that is a huge part of his game and it's a huge part of their offense. And they look so stagnant and so out of sorts and just discombobulated when he's not, you know, drawn fouls and he's not able to, you know, kind of pump up his numbers at the line. And again, with some of these matchups he's potentially looking at, whether it's Paul George, Jimmy Butler, you know, even going back to Otto Porter, who played him well last year, like, you don't necessarily think that DeMar is going to win those handily, do you? But this is an all-star we're talking about. This is a guy who's about to get a max contract. Shouldn't we be thinking like he has a chance to win all those matchups? And so to me, that's kind of why he's on the pressure cooker a little bit. It's like, okay, man, like, if you're going to get $100 million this summer, like, what are you going to do for it when it's on the line against, you know, these other premier, you know, wing type players in a playoff series? Like, step up.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, he's worth $100 million if Hassan Whiteside is going to be worth $100 million. But it's definitely, I think your point about reputation, like, I could totally see him going down sort of a Joe Johnson lane. And it's fun having the Raptors be this good. So it would be cool to watch him step up. And then the other piece is Barnes, who I'm a Carolina fan. I've been confused by Harrison Barnes since his freshman year. So it's like going on like 6 years now. And so his contract year is pretty much perfect that it's played out in the most confounding way possible. We would probably need like a solid hour to discuss like his game and the perpetual questions that follow him. But where do you think he's at?
Well, just kind of digging into his numbers and everything this year, the most fascinating thing to me was how you could kind of construct these two different narratives, right? So you could construct the narrative that they didn't skip a beat at all when he was injured. They just plugged Brandon Rush in. That lineup played like gangbusters. And so now all of a sudden, like, how much is Harrison Barnes worth the Warriors if you can just plug in a Brandon Rush who's, you know, a nice player, but not certainly not going to get big dollars?
Yeah, if I were Barnes, I would be pissed off at Harris or at Brandon Rush. I mean, like, there are a lot of times when we say guys like LeBron made Tristan Thompson a lot of money. Brandon Rush cost Harrison Barnes money from the Warriors this summer. It sucks. So that's one narrative. What's your other narrative?
Yeah, so that's definitely one narrative where it's like, okay, he's replaceable and you can get like 75% of the production probably for 20% of the cost. Like if he wants a max contract and you look at like his physical profile, his size, his position, you know, the kind of the history of guys at that spot, it kind of seems to me like he's going to be, if not a max, like very close to a pretty much no-brainer this summer. So you can kind of see why Golden State might talk themselves out of paying for that, because really the strength of their team is that trio of, you know, Steph, Draymond, and Klay. And if you can put any two guys or guys, you're probably going to be fine. The other side of the coin, though, is that when they go small, their net rating this year right now with the small ball lineup is +49.1.
Yeah.
Which basically you can make an argument is the greatest five-man combination of the modern era. And they're just hiding it.
I mean, they've like figured out it's like a cheat code for basketball.
Yes. Yeah. And it's so reliable. And it's like, they don't even really need to practice with it. Like they don't need to find it. Like they break out every once in a while. They broke it out against the Thunder down the stretch, you know, with amazing results basically every single time. And so once you have that scenario and you know, the other four members, whether it's Iguodala, Curry, Thompson, and Green are all under contract for next year, and the only missing piece is Barnes, and you start to say, look, we have the best five-man combination that's basically ever been created in the last 15 to 20 years of basketball. Wouldn't it be worth any amount of money to keep that five-man combination together? Because it could basically come as close to guaranteeing title contention as any other move that they could make. I think that's the counter-argument. And if you're Barnes, you're saying, look, it's not just about the offense. Yes, I take less than 10 shots a game. Yes, I stand in the corner, and pretty much all I do is knock down wide-open three-pointers and occasionally cut. But it's the defensive responsibilities at the four. It's the versatility to guard lots of different guys. It's the ability to rebound well enough to get by at the four. And it's the ability to spread out other teams and force them to go away from their traditional, you know, two-man, kind of big, the two-big front-line look. All of those things have lots of value that maybe don't show up in the stat sheet. And all those things are potentially not things that Brandon Rush could do for you.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I don't know what side I'm on. I think if I were the Warriors, I would pay a premium to keep him, even if that means a max deal. But it sort of remains to be seen how much they're going to have to pay. I believe Festus is up also, and so it's just going to be tough to sort of like ration out salary. But I like you said, I think he's sort of the luxury that takes them from like a very good team to a team that's completely unfair. So I think regardless, you pay to keep that intact. And there's Durant stuff too. This is why we would need an hour to discuss Harrison Barnes. If not Golden State, I would love to see him go to Indiana and be like a small ball four next to Miles Turner and Paul George, because I do think he's really good and sort of underutilized in Golden State. But yeah, man, I don't know. Because the other thing is like Steph was out against Atlanta and Harrison Barnes. You look for like a Barnes to step up in that situation. And he sort of like he's not that guy. Like he had 12 points last night. He was fine. But they needed Draymond to come up big to actually get the win. And so like Harrison Barnes is firmly fine. And if I were the Warriors, I would pay whatever to keep him to keep them intact. But it'll be interesting to watch because the playoffs is that's definitely going to be a story as the playoffs unfold.
For sure. And that's what I did. I hedged on the two picks. I didn't say one or the other. I said, let's see how this plays out in the playoffs. But I think there's a very realistic scenario where they get to the playoffs and they just start breaking out the smaller lineup more often. And they're smoking teams, and it just gets so overwhelming that it's kind of like certain times in that Western Conference Finals last year where, like, Houston just didn't even look like they belonged.
Yeah.
You know, if they do that, then the pressure to kind of keep him and to pay him to keep him happy is pretty high. And just my last point with Barnes is I don't think, even if you had to pay him max money, I think that's a totally tradable, totally liquid asset for the entire part of that contract. With his age, with his size, with his two-way contributions, I think he's a solid defender. I think he can definitely evolve into more offensively if he was in a different system. I think it's really hard to ask a guy to play a really sharply limited role like they've asked him and then just expect him to step up on a random night. But I think if he goes into a season in a different situation where all of a sudden he's sort of like a Gordon Hayward in Utah, you know, that type of player where it's like, look, you're going to have the ball a lot. We want you to kind of create off the dribble. We're going to make sure you get your touches and your shots every single night. I think he's up to that kind of task. Or even like a Nicholas Batum in Charlotte where, you know, his numbers this year have gone up because they've kind of featured him a little bit more. I think Barnes is totally up to that task, you know, over the next however many years. So if you get into a situation where you pay him max money, you keep him for a year, and then, you know, the contracts start to get tricky after that, I think you can always trade off of him.
I don't ever see that in a
situation where you're stuck.
Yeah, that's a good point. The other thing is that Bogut and Iguodala are getting older. So if anything they can do to keep that core young and sort of extend this run is probably a good idea. But yeah, we'll see. And all right, so here we have, as we've gone for almost an hour, two more quick points. Number one, I want to take a minute to dedicate this podcast to the memory of Ty Lawson and his Rockets career. I came into this season with high hopes for Ty, and it just really hasn't worked. I'm going to blame it entirely on James Harden. And none of this is Ty Lawson's fault. This isn't your fault, Ty. But yeah, it's just the end of a glorious run this week in Houston.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, it's funny that you said dedicating the memory, because when you talk to people about Ty Lawson, a lot of times it's hushed voices is what you're kind of getting in response.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like, yeah, you know, like
a lot of softly shaking heads in Houston.
And, you know, like the fond memories of a few years ago where he was almost an all-star. It's pretty tough. I mean, to me, the season kind of turned when he gave the interview to Yahoo and he wasn't really taking full responsibility for his off-court behavior. You know, he didn't really seem, fully to comprehend the seriousness of what had happened. He didn't really seem to be acknowledging any potential issues behind it. He was just trying to kind of keep it moving and play it off. And I wonder if that was the right approach, or if maybe, you know, some of that stuff wound up coming back to get him at some point this season. He didn't look the same. It's a pretty precipitous drop to go from being, you know, a fringe all-star candidate, like I said a few years ago, to basically being unplayable. It's going to be really interesting to see, you know, how many teams make a run at him down the stretch, or is his season just done?
Well, listen, we're pulling for Ty Lawson. And I didn't read the Yahoo interview. I only read delusional over the top praise for Ty Lawson. And I loved him at Carolina. I'm on Team Ty no matter what. But yes, I think it's healthy for everyone that this Houston run is over. And you know, we'll always have the memories. So final thought. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm ready to become a Knicks fan with him and Kristaps and Melo. I think a couple months off might be the healthier option. And just like my actual basketball analysis with Ty was like, I thought he was going to be able to share the ball with Harden. And it turns out Harden just like he works better when he's starting 90% of the possessions. And I also like was very high on the Rockets. And then like that first week of games, I tuned into a Houston game and it was like, oh shit, like Ty Lawson's fat and he can't really jump anymore. And so that did not bode well for the season. But
well, look, if there's hope for Raymond Felton, and there has been, then there's hope for Ty Lawson.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, exactly.
And also the same thing we said earlier about LeBron and having to win on his own terms and the kind of implications that has in the locker room, I think it totally applies to Harden too.
Yeah.
And I think some of these guys, if you really are serious about wanting to compete with the Warriors and the Spurs, because both those teams are going to be factors here for the next few years and both have really strong cultures in terms of how the players view each other, it's going to be time to look in the mirror a little bit. You know, guys like Harden, LeBron, and right on down the line, you know, they got to realize that that's kind of separating their teams from those other teams.
Really, this is about Harden and LeBron and mirrors. Last topic. Can we please talk about Chuck the Condor? Were you at the Clippers game?
I wasn't at the Clippers game, but I was watching it in horror like everybody else. Well, first of all, I love birds. Like, and I could totally sidetrack this because I regularly walk through a bird sanctuary, like as part of like my little exercise route. And like, when you go to the club and like the bouncers and like the other people who are working, they all have like the head nods they kind of give you when you're like, you know, approaching the door. Once you get inside,
they're kind of knowing.
Yeah, so like birders, like the people who are really serious about birders, like birds and following them and taking photos of them and, you know, kind of like waiting out in the wilderness for them, they have the exact same head nod. Like it's the same thing. So like if you're walking through the bird sanctuary, they all give you that same little like what the like head nod, like, okay, like you're serious. You're out here looking at birds just like I am. So I feel like maybe I have a little credibility on this topic just because I've gotten that head nod from people before.
This is what podcasts are all about, man. We're learning so much about each other. Like I have Michael Jordan issues. You're a birder. A beautiful thing is happening right here.
I'm not going to call myself a birder. I'm just going to say I've got the birder street cred. Okay, I get the head nods.
You've got some birder impulses.
Bingo. So I don't really get it at all. Like, what does the condor have to do with anything? And the main bird, as far as I can tell down here, is the pelican, which is kind of awkward because we already have a creepy pelican mascot, you know? So if you were going to go with the, and I guess California condor, like that's the, I don't know if that's the state bird, but it's definitely up there. I just don't know what relationship that has to the Clippers. That part was confusing to me. The bird part was confusing. That's all I'm going to say.
That's fair. Let me read you a couple tweets from Vince Staples, popular rapper from L.A., maybe one of the most famous Clippers fans outside of Billy Crystal. First tweet, all caps, Elton Brand didn't die for this. This is why nobody buys Windows computers. I'm really about to shed a tear. Fourth in the West and we out here off-brand Fruit Loopin'. You mean to tell me nobody in the meeting was like, Stevie, maybe this isn't a good idea. Boogie out here almost socking shit out and Boogie out here almost socking shit out and we're unveiling majestic birds. I think I'm about to be a Kings fan. This is the last straw. So that's the Clippers fan perspective.
First of all, let's give Clippers fans a lot of credit for really owning the self-deprecation and the self-mocking angle. Like that is definitely their thing. And they probably have no choice. They're probably boxed into that.
Can I tell you something? That's why I love this. I like mascots should be stupid. They should be weird. Chuck the Condor looks like he was built from old mascot parts. And it's just like nothing about this makes sense. And it's incredibly creepy, which is another key mascot ingredient because like kids will be like, oh, there's Chuck the Condor. And then like 10 years later, that they'll look back and be like, Chuck the Condor is really creepy. And that's like a key part of the NBA maturation experience. So I don't know, man. I'm team Chuck the Condor no matter what.
Yeah. Why is he named Chuck? Did we ever find that out?
That's the other thing. I saw a promotion where he was giving away like free Chuck Taylors and stuff. And so I don't really know what they're doing with Chuck, but I love it. And it just sort of it adds to the crazy vibe that Steve Ballmer has brought to the Clippers. And I'm not sure. I wouldn't call it fun. I think people are mostly just confused and a little concerned. But, you know, it's unique. So the Clippers have that going for them.
Well, give Steve Ballmer credit for not ever allowing anyone's opinions of him to dictate his actions. I mean, I think he's moving past that point. He's really on a zen level where it doesn't matter what you think of him. It's not going to influence them one way or the other, for better and worse.
He's such a good testament to what like several billion dollars can do, because he basically does not have to run his ideas past anybody. He dresses however he wants. He liked basketball, so he went and bought a basketball team, and now he's running them however he wants. And like that right there is the American dream. So anybody looking to sort of live the dream, go invent the next Microsoft. That's what we should be doing.
And he's got an unbelievably active tongue. Like if you just like, it's just out of control. Like he has no control over during games. He just gets so excited. I mean, it's like Jordan's, but you know, the crack version of it. When something good happens, it's just like flies out of his mouth, almost hits his nose. Like it's just so much.
It's
yeah,
great.
I think you're right. Like I think the Condor is symbolic. It has no connection to the actual like Clippers logo. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. I guess locally there's sort of a tie-in. The Chuck Taylors, like name your mascot after a Converse brand, that seems really strange in 2016. especially when like Dan Daniels showing around. So like clearly Vans was the move right now, like definitely white Vans. But I think it just says, you know, Steve Ballmer's trying to flex a little bit. Nobody, like you're saying, nobody can tell him what to do. And the Clippers are going to roll forward with it. I would love to get the behind the scenes honest thoughts of guys like Blake and DeAndre.
Oh my God. Just Clippers employees, just regular Clippers employees. Some, one of them needs to write a book about the last like 4 years and what it's been like from Sterling to Ballmer. And I'm sure it's been quite a ride for those guys.
Could it have been worse, though? I don't think it was the absolute worst. Like it could have been worse.
The Clippers logo was worse than Chuck the Condor. Like that it set a low bar and Chuck the Condor cleared it. So, you know, we got that going for us. And you're right. Steve Ballmer's facial expressions, his active tongue. He's definitely he's another person to watch under the spotlight in the NBA playoffs. But anyways, we should wrap up. I'll talk to you soon. Okay.
All right, man.
All right. That was great. Thank you to any listeners who made it to the end. You can find us on Twitter if you want to tweet at us about Michael Jordan or Steve Ballmer's tongue. And we will be back next week.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.